Welcome to the Mama Bear Dares podcast. I'm Leslie.
And I'm Tessie.
And we are sisters-in-law. Dang. We started this podcast because we believe it isn't necessarily the rich, powerful, or well-known who are making waves in this world. It's the moms. It's the women tending to their toddlers while launching international nonprofits or caring for babies and creating art. It's the women who believe in both their mother self and their other self and who are nourishing both as those around them stand back in admiration for the way they stride through life. We know this to be true. It's the hand that rocks the cradle that rules the world. Join the Mama Bear community where we support and encourage women doing big and bold things with their everyday lives, in addition to being great moms, and dare you to harness the power of your Mama Bear to live a life of love and compassion.
That's right. So, Leslie, today we are talking to Jenny Barnes about the life-changing magic of tidying up. The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing by Marie Kondo. It's this book that has taken America and the world by storm.
It's not a book. It's a phenomenon. It's crazy.
Yeah, and we've been interested in this since we started talking about the podcast. We knew we wanted to have somebody on to tell us why exactly this has become a thing. Mm-hmm. Jenny, for a little background, is a mom and a photographer and an all-around just seriously lovely person. Motivated by the sheer amount of things her family of five had accumulated and her impatience toward managing things, she picked up the Kondo method and tells us about her experience with implementing the method in her life, starting with her closet.
Ay, ay, ay. The closet, the shoes. Oh, we know this process. This must have been. So what's interesting, Tessie, about this conversation is I've had many conversations about the Kondo method with lots of different people. It really has taken American moms by storm, I think. Lots of us are already talking about it. But what I think makes this interview with Jenny really interesting is that shortly after she picked this book up and began the process of decluttering, you know, unloading, kind of cleaning house, her father-in-law passed away. And she was suddenly thrust into this job of not only sorting through her own clutter, but also cleaning out her mother and father-in-law's home. Ugh. I mean, it must have been a fascinating year for Jenny. She talks about her in-laws' home as one that held years and years of a collection of things, books, clothes, bags full of other bags that they would need to use later, boxes full of other boxes, all of these things that if we can think about our parents' and maybe grandparents' generation, the things they felt that were necessary to hold on to. So this experience really heightened Jenny's sensitivity toward the place of things in her life. And it really made her more reflective about the role that things play in her day to day, which I think makes for a really interesting reflection.
I do too. You know, I can admit that when you first brought up this idea to just have someone come on to talk about the Kondo method, I was mm-hmm. a little like, okay.
It was kind of like when I brought up poetry. And maybe like my reaction when you brought up, we should talk about sex.
You're right. Listeners, I hope you know that like that's the beauty of our relationship is we encourage each other to push forth mm-hmm. and go for it. Because the poetry one of my favorites.
The sex one? So much fun.
Yeah. See? But this one too turned out to be, I think it's because I read the book and I just didn't connect with it, quite honestly. So I just didn't think of how we could spread it out for an hour. But the conversation is a beautiful conversation that really just elevates past organization. You know, she talks about her father-in-law was an Episcopal priest, and Marie Kondo in her book is rather ritualistic in her method. This is one of the places where I was just like, oh, boy. because she talks and she encourages you to hold each item in almost ritualistically let go of it or put it in its proper place. Meaning, like, you served me a purpose, you no longer do, sayonara, right? Mm-hmm. But it reminded me, you know, I grew up Lutheran, so there were a lot of liturgies that were very similar, just kind of this ritualistic process of getting you into the right framework, the right mm-hmm. mind space. And so it's really a liturgy of holding an item and asking it for guidance. We dig for a connection between what is held in our physical world and what is held within all the time. And I love the way this narrative begins to weave through Jenny's life. And really, this is when I started thinking, this podcast, this interview is so interesting. Because the idea, can we have a spiritual relationship with our material things? And what does the ritual of letting go of these things teach us about existing in this world? And these are all questions that we explore during this podcast. So if you're like me and don't really care about organization, I mean, I'm actually a very organized person, but I don't like reading about it. You know, these aren't like there. I don't have a label maker, although that kind of sounds fun, but this conversation really goes beyond it. It is really an interesting one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we talk about really just kind of preparing then for the end of life, which kind of sounds like a downer, but I think it's really important to start thinking about. And we've heard from Jenny, we've heard from other friends and listeners that sorting through your departed loved ones' things can be a really difficult task, both emotionally and spiritually and physically in terms of time, really. And so this conversation encouraged me to want to like ask my mom and my stepdad and like actually it's something our in-laws have started doing, but just to start thinking about their things now so that we can be prepared. We can also do this for our own children.
I think we need to do it for our own children. I say in the podcast that my mom did this. She literally wrote out a couple pages worth of things, like the piano goes to this person, this goes to this person, between my sister and my brother and me, mm-hmm. my jewelry goes to this person. You know, she did it all, and they are in very good health. They're in their early 60s. It just takes so much pressure off. And I even thought, you know, at this time, Zach and I don't have a lot of possessions.
And can so I have I don't, your fur? Can I have, oh, you wouldn't have fur. Can I have your diamonds? Can you put me on the list for your diamonds, please?
I think I have one diamond and it's smaller than yours. This is what happens when you get married at 20 years old. So, yes. But you know, so I don't necessarily need to do that for my kids, but it did make me think, you know, as I get older, if we are to accumulate something from my mom and dad, because they do have stuff that has a lot more value in terms of it's been around longer. Some of it has been my grandmother's or my great aunt's or something, to just write it out and get it immediately while it's, you know, while you welcome it into your house, maybe putting it down so that it's always there for your children is such a good idea. It really takes the burden off of them.
I agree. And I think another point that I wanted to bring up here in our introduction is just how focusing on stuff and on your accumulation of things, it really does have a spiritual connection. And it's something that we can use as an instructional piece for our kids. So Jenny talks about this. And again, I just sort of want to reiterate, like, when you're listening to this interview, what can you take away? Well, one thing you can take away is just the idea of having these conversations with your kids about the value of stuff in your life. I think that in itself, as popular as the condo method has become, it's still kind of countercultural mm-hmm. to, you know, not consume as much as we yes. might like to. And so I think we really can help set the stage for more freedom for our kids by living with less stuff at the outset.
I agree. And it helps kids to define their worth, not through their brand of jeans or mm-hmm. shoes, but rather the quality of their character. And this is a hard one because for children, especially, I will have three middle schoolers in the fall, and this is a tough age. But by changing the relationship of our kids and stuff, we can set them up for an untethered adulthood. And I think that's a beautiful idea.
I do too. And really practically speaking, I think we'll come back to this on Wednesday. We're going to talk about when I actually engaged in a 1 year clothing fast. I called it the Great American Apparel Fast.
I love this year. And I love that year of yours.
You're going to listen and hear some ideas and kind of like theories in this podcast. But on Wednesday, I think we'll really break it down into, okay, I could actually do this. I can put this step in. I can make this change or whatever. I think this conversation really will resonate with our mama bears. Even if you haven't read The Kondo Method, you know, we do recommend it, right? I would recommend it.
Yeah. Yeah. I will too. Even if I didn't love it or do it, I still would recommend it. It's a small book. I don't know if we say that in that. It's actually a really short book.
Yeah, and there's just so much freedom in a clutter-free life. And we just challenge you, if you haven't read the book and you don't want to, just listen for the cliff notes, you know. Start with your closet, carve out some time, take everything out, only put back the things that spark joy. I mean, that's sort of the cliff notes version, I guess.
Yeah, you know what I think we should do? In the comments section on Facebook, we should post this picture of you when you were doing the Kondo Method for your closet. I love it. It's just one of my favorite pictures of you because they're just a pile of clothes on your dining room table. And you went all in, as you naturally normally do.
Oh, yeah.
And realized it does take time, you guys. So make sure you do carve out some time. Leslie, we want our listeners to listen and to actively pick out these places in the podcast where she's talking about, you know, the freedom that comes with a closet that is not full of stuff that no longer fits you or no longer brings you joy. The freedom that would have happened had when she just lost her father-in-law, if he would have set aside something that let her know what she wanted with these possessions to grieve. You know, it's so hard to grieve when you're also trying to go through the house and get rid of physical things. My friend Kathy, I was talking to her about this because her husband just lost in the same year his mother and his sister, and he had to do this for both of their houses. So he was trying to process these two women that he loved very, very much, and then he had to go through their house. And she said, you know, I've seen him age 7 years in the short amount of time because it's too much. For me, the important part, what really I kept coming back to after I listened back to this podcast was, what do we want to kind of saddle the next generation with in terms of, do we really want to give them this feeling like they have to keep up with the Joneses, you know? And also, practically speaking, do we really want to keep buying stuff that ends up in the landfill that then affects our children and their children and their children? I think we just need to be more intentional. And that's what I took from this podcast was, like, even though I've always been, like I said, I like having a few shirts that I really like that I feel really confident in and things like that, it made me realize I need to be more intentional about talking with my children about it, about why this is a value of mine and why I see it should be a value of theirs too. You know, why I think it's important that that tradition continues in our family, because it's important. It really is.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and talk about just a few really practical ideas that you and I gathered from listening to Jenny talk on this podcast.
Okay, good idea.
So one thing that she said that I have since tried to implement in my life is, you know, the ritual of holding an item before you maybe give it away or take it to Goodwill or whatever. I'm trying to back that up, as Jenny suggested. When I'm in the store contemplating a purchase, I will then hold ritual. I will then hold the item and think, okay, do I really want this? Where am I going to, you know, if it's an item of clothing, where am I going to wear this? Will I wear it next year? You know, before making the purchase and bringing it home, I really want to ask those questions at that moment in the store rather than at the end of the item's life.
Yeah, I love that. One of our sweet little babes was clearly doing a few things in school that we, after this conversation, that we just felt like he was doing to try to be cool. And this. One of our kids, his whole Christmas list was full of like Under Armour, Nike. The tag was really important to him. Mm-hmm. And so we started to see this theme, and it just kind of shook me awake when we, after we talked to Jenny, that like this kid is finding his value in his Under Armour, and I need to stop that, you know? And so he messed up, and our consequence was saying, hey, how about you go get all of your stuff that has a brand name on it, and I'm just going to keep it in my room for a while, because we want you to remember that what makes you cool is who you are. Like, you were born cool, man. You're cool. You're, you know, like, and the people who love you and want to hang out with you could care less if you're wearing Under Armour, and could care less if you have Nike on your sleeve. And we just want to remind you of that, that like your value is not in this stuff. And so for probably, I don't know, a month maybe or so, he wore stuff, you know, that didn't have a brand name. Obviously he had plenty of clothes still. And guess what? It worked, because sometimes I think we all need that reminder, just like none of that defines us. And so now when he wears that, you can tell the difference. Like, you can mm-hmm. tell that it's not because he thinks that's what's needed to gain friends or gain favor in anybody's eyes, but just because he likes how it looks or whatever, right. Or because that's the only thing clean is usually what. So that I pulled that from the podcast from Jenny.
That's fantastic. That's really good. So another idea or practice that you could do is that when you buy something new, like buy a new article of clothing, then take one out of your closet and donate it or give it to a friend.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's easy probably, right? Like, that's a pretty simple place to start.
A super simple place to start. And have you heard those things, like in bigger cities, often people will have a Friday or something where they bring everything to one person's house that they mm-hmm. were, that no longer fits them or anything like that. And they have all their friends over and they just kind of go through each other's things yes. that they no longer want. And I was like, that is such a good idea, because
I know.
I mean, I love what you wear. So if you're getting rid of something, like, let me know, you know?
Likewise.
I just think that's so smart.
Yes, that is such a creative, great way to kind of unburden yourself, but also go shopping with no consequence, really. Yeah. You're not like contributing to the landfill. You're not contributing to the overuse of water and the production of cotton, things like that.
Yeah.
So,
so listeners, tell us what you want to change after this conversation. What stuck out to you about the conversation? Where do you feel like you can improve? Because we can all improve, right? In these kind of ways. And either having the heart, I mean, it's a hard talk with your parents or your in-laws or your grandparents about what they want with their stuff, what they want done, you know, when the time's done. Like, what are you guys going to pull from this? Let's all talk about it. Because I think holding each other accountable is really important on things like this that are going to be really hard. Or post your picture of your closets turned inside out, like we'll post of Leslie too. But, you know, you're going to enjoy this conversation with Jenny. You're going to go along as it's almost like we get to witness her processing it as it happens, which I always think is a really wonderful thing to witness.
All right, let's drop in on our conversation with Jenny. Welcome, Mama Bears, to another episode of the Mama Bear Dares podcast. Today, we are so excited to be interviewing Jenny Barnes. She's an incredible woman with so many talents and such a great big heart. She's a photographer, a mom to three, a dog mom, which we laugh about and bond over, and a great friend. So Jenny recently read the book that everyone is talking about, The Life-Saving Magic of Tidying Up, The Japanese Art of Decluttering and Organizing by Marie Kondo. And she is here to talk to us about what this has done for her life. And we are so excited for this conversation. Without further ado, welcome.
Welcome. Thank you.
Jenny, some people read books and then they're like, oh, that was a good message, and then let it go. So what about The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up really resonated with you and made you want to then kind of propelled you to change?
I guess I was actually searching for a book like this to help me get my life in order. Mm-hmm. in all honesty, I have not had a clean house since June 23rd, 2004, which is when Martha, my oldest child, was born. And, you know, your life changes dramatically. You know, people try to prepare you for it, but until you're in it, you don't really get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm surrounded by piles in my house, and I wasn't raised that way. I was always a neat freak, but it just went out the window when I had kids. You know, there were more important things than dusting and dealing with that pile of mail, mm-hmm. or, you know, those books that you've been meaning to read. Mm-hmm. Your priorities change. And so I think the past couple of years, I just looked around and I'm just overwhelmed by the stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've just been searching for a way to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw this book, I picked it up, and being a type A person, you know, it's one thing to hear about it or read about it in generalities, but I wanted a plan. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted step-by-step instruction on how to purge and simplify, mm-hmm. and deal with these things. And that's what I found in this book.
Okay, so where are you at in the process?
Well, basically, the whole Kondo method is that, well, let's move back. Most people think you deal with one room at a time, mm-hmm. and you do it over time.
Right.
But her method is that you declutter by category. And that if you do it correctly, you'll never have to do this again, because it's a whole philosophy and a way of dealing with stuff. So I would say I'm still really in the beginning. Clothing is the first category that, mm-hmm. she recommends dealing with, and it's huge. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a huge, mm-hmm. category.
Yeah.
And it's embarrassing how much stuff I had, yeah. and have. And
why do you think it's embarrassing? Why does that embarrass
Because you? It's embarrassing to me because, you know, I look around and there are so many people without, mm-hmm. and with so little. A few years ago, I was involved in a Soul Hope party where we, you know, got together and we helped to make shoes for children in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And as I was preparing to send out the invitation, you know, I just, out of curiosity, went in and counted my pairs of shoes. And, I mean, I think I had close to 75 pairs of shoes, you know, including flip-flops, right. and, you know, all these different shoes. And, I mean, we were getting ready to send shoes to children who didn't have a pair of shoes. Mm-hmm. So I guess that was the beginning of kind of looking around at my things. I mean, I'm a stay-at-home mom. Do I really need 5 pairs of chocolate brown pumps? Not really. Right. No. You know, and so it just made me reevaluate. I can't wear it all. Mm-hmm. You know, I have so much that I forget what I have. Mm-hmm. And so I'll go out and buy more. And it's just, it's ridiculous. It's this, if you let it, it's a never-ending cycle, mm-hmm. of more and more and more and more. And so I decided I just needed to stop. I needed to stop for me. I needed to stop for my kids because they don't appreciate it. I mean, I grew up in a very middle class family. Mm-hmm. And although I never went without, I didn't have a lot of the extras that I'm now giving my kids. Mm-hmm. And they don't appreciate it. I go down in their rooms and it's, you know, their things are stuffed in a corner or under the bed and they don't want to put it back on a hanger, so they throw it in the laundry basket for me to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, this is ridiculous. I would have killed to have these things when I was, you know, 11 years old.
Yeah.
And, mm-hmm. it's just, again, it's just so many things just kind of came to a head at once.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I just looked around my closet and said, you know, I spend so much of my day managing stuff, mm-hmm. looking for stuff, buying stuff, coordinating and organizing stuff, thinking about what more stuff I need. And, you know, if I didn't have to worry about stuff, my days would be, I'd have so much time. I could sit down and read a book. Yeah. Right. I mean, so anyway, that's kind of how it started.
That is interesting. I can totally relate. I think when I first realized that stuff was taking over my life, it was that kind of week between Christmas and New Year's when, you know, a lot of people are off of work and you're just kind of hanging out with your family. And I realized that you know, the holidays are certainly, that's just a whole other topic of consumption and excess. But it was during that period several years ago that I realized I am managing stuff right now. I'm spending my time getting rid of old things so that we can move the new things in. And, like, I just want to be eating pie with my family. Like, it's, you know, I don't want stuff to be the thing that I do. So I think, you know, I know you, and I know you're not, like, a huge shopper, or, like, you're a pretty average consumer, probably, and yet you're feeling kind of shackled by all of these things.
And it's so easy, too. You know, we've talked before about, you know, the lower price of items causes you to buy more. I mean, you're, you know, going down the aisle at Target, you know, a $7 t-shirt. Why not? Why not another t-shirt?
Sure.
And then you look in the closet and you have, you know, 2 dozen t-shirts that, you know, you only wear probably 3 or 4 of them regularly. Right. And the rest just, you know, get shifted back and forth in the closet.
Yeah. So when you started the process of tidying up, talk to us a little bit for listeners who might not know about just the process that is recommended in the book, because it is quite rigorous. And whether or not you kind of followed that to a T, or if you've kind of been flexible with the process, or what that's been like at your house.
Well, the whole process, starting with clothes, is what you are supposed to do is literally take everything. And by everything, I mean everything. every article of clothing that you have, take it out of the drawers, take it out of the closet, from under the bed, because you know you have stuff under the bed. Take everything out, throw it on a pile, and then you have to literally pick up each article of clothing and look at it. And this is where it gets a little new agey, and when I tell people, I always say, but I'm not really like that, but trust me. you have to pick up each item. You have to feel it. You have to look at it and say to yourself, again, this is
weird. Or out loud.
Does this bring me joy? And it seems so simple, but it's not. I mean, there are so, think about the things you have. We hang on to so much stuff out of guilt. Oh, but I paid a lot for that. And you know, I've only worn it twice, so I should keep it because, you know, it was a lot of money. Or, oh, you know, my aunt gave this to me and she's no longer living and it's special. And, you know, just so much stuff that we know we should deal with. We know we should just send it to Goodwill or send it, give it to a friend who might wear it better than we wore it. But just forcing yourself to look at it and deal with it makes you sort it. And she basically says, if you can't answer that question in the first few seconds, pitch it. Because you should have this immediate spark for this item. And if it didn't, maybe it did. Maybe if you'd asked yourself that question 6 months ago or a year ago, it would have. But maybe it's served its purpose. It brought you happiness. And now it's time to say goodbye.
Yeah.
And she even says, you know, say goodbye to it.
Yes, I love that.
You know, I draw the line there. I don't need to say goodbye to, you know, those socks that have been in the back of the drawer for ages. But, you know, to each his own.
Yeah, I'm totally up for saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Like, I've only done my clothes with this method. But I literally have been like, thank you, socks, for
Keeping me warm on that camping.
Yeah.
But now it's time to say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yeah. When I was reading the book, I was reminded that that is just something we as a culture do in general. We hang on to things for far too long. We hang on to jobs when they no longer serve us. They bring us down. They dilute our happiness. We hang on to relationships that are the same way. And for whatever reason, we always feel guilt about saying goodbye to certain things. In one of our podcast episodes, we interviewed Yossi Back, who is a style blogger. And, you know, she was saying this blog served an amazing purpose when she needed it the most. And then it stopped doing that. And she had such a hard time letting it go. But I thought, I think the reason that this book really resonates with people is, of course, we all have too much stuff. I mean, we can admit that the American culture
propels you to keep buying more and more, right? But it's really speaking to a larger message just about where are your priorities and is there a way to let go of stuff when it's no longer serving you? So yeah, you're talking about clothes, and she also talks about pictures, which is, you know, I mean, she's talking about the larger problem of just hanging on to things that served a wonderful purpose for a time and then didn't. So like, maybe just talk about, I mean, that's a big part of the process and there are smaller parts, but that's the main hiccup, right? I think to get past is just holding it and asking yourself if it does still serve that purpose. So like, what does it feel like to hold clothes or pictures or whatever and to say no, like, oh no, this is no longer good.
Well, I've done one round. Actually, I've done two rounds now of the process, and it's freeing. Like the first couple things, it's hard, but like after you have to like run out to the garage to pick, you know, get another garbage bag. You just feel, I felt like with each bag I filled, there was a, you know, 10 pounds of baggage that was just taken off of my shoulders, and it was really freeing. In fact, you know, we talk about this on a greater scale. I actually went through the book in preparing for this today and wrote down two quotes that I had underlined. And one is that the system of tidying up can be painful because it forces us to confront our imperfections, our inadequacies, and the foolish choices we've made in the past. And again, that goes back to hanging on to jobs and maybe relationships that we need to just let go. And the other one is the question of what you own is actually the question of how you want to live your life. And that's a big part of it for me because, you know, we spend so much of our life chasing more stuff. Like it's going to fill this empty void in our hearts. And it's not. It just makes us want more and more and more. And we don't treasure the things that are most important to us. If my house caught on fire, I can assure you I'm not running into my closet to grab pieces of clothing or a pair of shoes or, you know, a Kate Spade bag that I got on super sale once upon a time. And it's one of the nicest things I own.
Right.
But, you know, no, I'm going to get my kids and I'm probably going to get pictures. That's it. The rest, I mean, honestly, if your house burned down, it would be devastating. I don't mean to diminish that, but it's replaceable. You know, even items that are family items, it's just stuff. My kids aren't going to care probably about the stuff that I care about that belonged to my grandparents or my great-grandparents. You know, even family things, I mean, when my father-in-law passed away unexpectedly in October, and when we were going through things and cleaning out the house, you know, he had just wall upon wall of degrees that were not only his degrees and advanced degrees, but those of his father and grandfather.
Interesting.
And they don't mean anything really to my husband, and they certainly don't mean anything to me, and I'm quite certain they mean nothing to my kids. But we kept them, and they're in a box in our garage. They're actually in two boxes in our garage, and they will stay there, I'm sure. And, you know, there are just so many collections of other people's that we curate. You know, I don't want to live in a museum. I want to live in a house with my family and my things. And but it's hard. You feel like you're, you know, you think, oh, what would... You know, what would grandma say if she saw me get rid of, you know, that set of china?
When
in reality,
been in a box in the basement.
You know. When in reality, grandma's like somewhere, if you believe in heaven, grandma's in heaven, like, get rid of your shit.
Get rid of it.
Guess what? Nobody cares. Nobody cares.
You cannot take it with you. So it is hard, but it's freeing. I feel like, again, with each bag that I collected and gave away, it was freeing. I could finally see what was in my closet and see those things that, and wear those things again that that actually made me feel good about myself or happy when I wore them. And I've done two rounds now, and I'm sure I could probably do another Right. I hope to do another round of cleaning clothes this summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's on to each of my kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, we're a family that likes to travel. Mm-hmm. I'd rather spend less money on stuff.
Yeah.
And more money on moments and experiences. And, you know, maybe that's something I'll have to start saying to them. You know, yeah, I could get you another, you know, $30 Under Armour sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. Or we could put that in a special jar.
Yeah.
And, you know, save it for that next trip.
That's actually something that we say a lot, is just like, yeah, you could get that, or we could go someplace really fun. Or, like, you know, just, it's that sort of reallocation, which I think is a lot of, you know, when you're looking at your priorities and when you're trying to just figure out how you want to raise your kids and how you want to live, like, what are your priorities? And in this culture, it's easy to prioritize things because the marketing messages are so, so very clear. So talking about kids, though, you mentioned that you're reading another book called Cleaning House, A Mom's 12-Month Experiment to Rid Her Home of Youth Entitlement. So I know we've talked a lot about the tidying up of things, but tell me, I'm really intrigued about this book and what your plans are.
Rarely do I underline, highlight, fold a page in a book, but I had to get a second highlighter for this book because, again, it all started with the organizing book, but then I just realized that's just part of it. Again, this bigger picture of who do I want my kids to be? What my kids got it from someone. They got it from my husband and me. I mean, they can't go out and buy themselves a ridiculous amount of clothing. I buy them lots of clothing because I didn't have lots of clothing. I grew up in a very middle-class household with blue-collar parents. You know, none of my grandparents graduated high school. And I went to a school where there were, you know, a decent percentage of affluent kids, and I happened to be in a lot of their classes, and they were, you know, good people. I don't get me wrong there, but they had a lot of stuff. And I remember my parents, you know, hearing this message, you know, do well in school, get a good scholarship, go to a good school, find a job that you love, and do well, and you can have nice things. And so I think there's a sense of having things equals I'm a success and I'm happy and I've got it together. And I think that's a lot of, you know, we're spinning our wheels trying to keep up with the Joneses, who in turn are just trying to keep up with the Smiths next door to them, and the Smiths are trying to keep up to the Millers. And, you know, that's why the average American household, I think, is something like $15,000, you know, in consumer debt. Now, why? You know, you know, have to take on second jobs so we can pay down the credit card bills so our kids can be happy, when in fact our kids just want us to be home with them. So it's just, it's a whole mindset we need to change. And, you know, reading the book has made me realize, you know, I'm responsible for these three little lives and, you know, setting them, helping to set them on the right path. And, you know, helping to shape what their ideals are and determine what's important in their life. And I don't want to send them away with this message that stuff equals happiness, because it doesn't. It just breeds more discontentment. You know, I think of my grandparents who lived in this, like, 1,400 square foot home with one bathroom. They got three television channels. And I never, ever in my life heard my grandparents say, I want or I wish I had. And they were so happy, and they raised three great kids, and they were amazing role models. And, you know, they were Depression generation, and, you know, somewhere along the way things have shifted, and not in a good way.
I read somewhere that we are losing members of the Depression era at a rate of about 600 people a day. So it seems like everyone kind of has this story, or they're beginning to have this story of elderly relatives being moved into assisted living and just, or passing away and then having to deal with these decades of possessions. And this is something, Jenny, that you have experienced firsthand. Can you just talk to us about the process of cleaning out your father-in-law's home after he passed away in the fall, and as you were helping your mother-in-law move into assisted living? What was that like emotionally, just very practically speaking? How did that shape this sort of journey of yours?
It was an incredibly overwhelming and physically and mentally draining experience. And I told my parents they need to be in a good place for at least another 10 years. I can't go through that again anytime soon. My in-laws are about a half generation older than my parents. My mother-in-law is in her late 70s. My father-in-law was 83 when he passed away unexpectedly in October. And we're still living in their own home. In fact, my father-in-law was an Episcopal priest, mm-hmm. and so always lived in parish housing. And this was the first home that they owned. Okay. So when most people of their age set were downsizing, they were getting their first home.
Wow.
Which in hindsight was a terrible, terrible idea. I mean, it was almost a 2,700 square foot home that they filled with everything. And so he passed away in early October, and my in-laws lived about 50 minutes away from us. So I would go down there once a week just to kind of check in, you know, be there for companionship reasons, but also help to just tidy the house. And we decided at that point to start going through things and organizing, because it became very clear to us very quickly that my in-laws were covering for one another. They both had weaknesses, and then the other person would, you know, be strong in that area. Mm-hmm. And so we weren't aware of all of the things that were kind of falling through the cracks. And I was going down there once a week, and it became very obvious very soon that we needed to start getting rid of some things. Mm-hmm. And so we just started, we're doing this opposite of the condo method. We decided to work room by room because I was just so overwhelmed by the amount of stuff that I couldn't have done it the other way. And so that was in October. And then the week before Christmas, my mother-in-law had a health scare, and it became apparent to her and to us that she could not remain in the home alone by herself, with both my sister-in-law and us living about an hour away from her. And so that happened on a Tuesday night, and by Friday, we had found a two-bedroom apartment for her in an independent living community here in the Quad Cities. So we started on Christmas Day. I remember we had Christmas dinner, we opened presents, and then the entire family started helping to get her packed up. We had plans to get her moved in the middle of January. And one of the ways we got her to buy into this was telling her, look, we'll move you there, but we'll go through your things gradually. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't need to sell the home in order to afford this move. Mm-hmm. We'll gradually go through this. You can come back in the summer, spend some time in the house, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Well, then the day after New Year's, someone approached us about buying her house. I mean, the house was not up for sale, but someone privately heard about the house being potentially available. And my mother-in-law surprisingly agreed to it. She realized that this was a good opportunity financially mm-hmm. and in other ways as well. But the people needed to be in the house by February 10th.
Oh, boy.
So that gave us 5 weeks to not only move her into a new home an hour away, but to completely gut a house of all of their possessions. In hindsight, I can't believe we did it. Mm-hmm. But as I kept saying to my husband and to my sister-in-law, failure is not an option. We have to do this.
Yeah.
It's in everyone's best interest. And since I'm the only one in the family without a full-time job, it seemed to be the right thing for me to spearhead this process. And I'm also probably the most organized and type A person, so it worked out that way. But wow. I've never realized how paralyzing it is to have so much stuff. Mm. And it was, my mother-in-law just didn't even know where to start. And so she trusted me to go through it pretty much by myself. Wow. And I think it was, you know, as, you know, the relation by marriage, I did not have the familial connection and those emotions connected with things. So I was able to go through and just tough love. You don't need this. Mm-hmm. But I mean, boxes and boxes of empty boxes that, you know, they might need someday. And bags and bags of used Ziploc baggies.
Wow.
Because you might need them someday.
Yeah, this isn't an uncommon thing. I mean, I think...
And they are not in any... You would walk into their home. It was spacious. It was tidy. They were not hoarders.
Right.
But, you know, that Depression generation, they didn't throw things away because they might need it someday. Yeah, and by keeping it, they would save money by not having to buy it. When, in fact, they had so much stuff, they didn't know what they had, and so they would have to go out and buy it anyway. So it was... We got through it. We got it done. You know, we... purchased or we rented a dumpster, a 40-foot dumpster that we filled to the brim. We had an auctioneer come in and take things and sell at public sale. And then we have the things that meant the most to her that we were able to fit into her new apartment.
And just,
and I have to say, she's so much happier now.
Yeah.
It, she just didn't know where to start. It was just too overwhelming. And I asked her one day, not too long ago, I said, is there anything you miss? And she said, no.
Yeah.
You know, she had so much stuff. She didn't know what she had. And those things that did mean the most to her, we took with us. Yeah. She, and she's happier. Her space now, her two-bedroom apartment now, which is, I want to say it's like 1,200 square feet, the apartment. So it's not small. Mm-hmm. But it's so much tidier now because she can manage. She has a quantifiable, a smaller quantity of stuff that she can manage on a day-to-day basis that is not so overwhelming for her.
Yeah.
And now we're left with things that when the time comes, when she passes away, I feel like my husband and his sister and her husband and I, we will be able to sort through the things and not be overwhelmed, you know, by that process, by when we're also being overwhelmed by grief.
So your father-in-law, as you said, was an Episcopal priest. So let's talk about the spirituality of stuff, because I find it really interesting that Marie Kondo asks you to actually hold each item. And there's almost like a ritual that kind of goes with that of just holding it and then deciding either to let go of it or put it in its proper place. It's almost like this liturgy where you are sort of in the moment asking for guidance. There's some sort of connection happening. So what do you think is the connection, or is there one, between what is held in our physical world and what's held kind of within?
Well, I know if he were here, he would say, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and everything that you need will be given unto you. You know, from a Christian's perspective, we are supposed to be concerned more about our souls and attaining everlasting life through Christ. And that the more we are tied to stuff on earth, we can only focus on life on earth and not the big picture, which is everlasting life with Christ in heaven. Obviously, this is nothing new. Mm-hmm. This has been around forever, this passion and for stuff and the greed and just being overall obsession with stuff and things. You know, Jesus urges us to focus not on things, you know, that if we have faith, those things will be provided to us in their own time. That doesn't mean we can't have things, but we have to keep it in perspective. You know, more than anything, Christ teaches us to be men and women for others.
Yeah. I mean, I want to make a point that, like, stuff in itself is not bad, right? It's our relationship to the stuff.
Exactly.
So there's nothing wrong with owning a car. There's nothing wrong with owning a Kate Spade bag. If you're totally okay with watching that car get pummeled by the snowplow, like, whoops, you know, my, husband was talking about this story where he had a speaker at a conference recently, and the guy was saying, my dad saved and saved and saved for a car. And this was your in-law's generation, basically. Saved and saved and saved for a car. Finally got this brand new car. Had it a couple weeks, and this man, who was about 17 at the time, wanted to take his girlfriend out. And so he said to his dad, can I take the new car? And the dad said, yeah, absolutely. You know, the keys are in it, whatever. And they lived, like, overlooking a bluff. And so the kid went and turned the car on, remembered he forgot something, ran upstairs, went out. The car had went down into the ravine, oh, gone, because he had put it in neutral instead of park. And he was consumed, obviously, with guilt, and went up to his dad and said, Dad, I don't know how to tell you this, but the car is gone. It went down. The dad's like, well, I guess you better take the truck. That was, you know, and Zach's like, what an amazing response. Right. But so that's a perfect example. I'm sure he felt really proud that he got to buy this brand new car, mm-hmm. and that he had saved up the money to do that. But then it crashed a week or so later, and he was just like, guess you better take the other one. Mm-hmm. So stuff isn't bad. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want anyone to think it's bad to buy that. But if your relationship to it is such that it scares you to have it or the thought of losing it, then check that relationship mm-hmm. is essentially what mm-hmm. this, episode is about.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I even think, there's a place for beautiful things mm-hmm. in our life. You know, yeah. Who doesn't love, like, a beautiful leather clutch, you know? I mean,
I don't. That's a dead cow, Leslie.
Well, I do. So stuff, it is, it's not bad. You're yeah. absolutely right. But I do think, again, it's
but the place, obsession. It's the obsession.
Or just that your stuff doesn't define you either. Right. You know, I mean, I can feel a little cuter if I'm wearing something that I feel cute in, but it's not, I'm not just my cute outfit. You know what right. I mean? So after having gone through these experiences, not just kind of your shift in perspective in your own home, but then just that huge process, that emotional and physical process of helping manage your in-laws things, how have they changed the way that you buy things now? What kind of consumer you've become?
I do look at things differently. I will pick something up, not necessarily clothes, but I'll think, is this going to end up in a landfill? It pains me every time we go to a fast food restaurant and my kids get a kid's meal and they get this little tchotchke, toy with it. Because I just know it's gone in the garbage. So, mm-hmm. I try to, when I purchase something, I try to think, is this something I want in my house, in my life long term? Mm-hmm. That I'm going to hang on to it and it's just not going to get pitched and be someone else's problem down the road. I try to ask myself, where is it being made? Is it being made in a place under ethical, conditions? Mm-hmm. But I have to say, more than anything, though, I pause more when I'm picking something up at the store. And I, instead of asking, does it bring me joy on the end of things, I try to ask myself that now on the front end. Mm-hmm. Will this bring me joy? Is it something I'm really going to treasure? Am I going to wear it, every week? And
yeah, it's good.
But, to answer that question a little bit deeper, my husband and I, having survived, our marriage survived this process of helping my, in-laws through this, we have agreed we are not going to do this to our kids. Yeah. I feel like everyone should move at least once every 5 years because it forces you to go through your things and deal with it. But I said, I don't want to do this to my kids. I don't want to, be responsible for that type of stress and responsibility, in their life to deal with my clutter, my stuff.
I think it's been maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. My mom emailed us and said, hey, here's a picture. This is exactly the stuff that I want to go to which kid. And if you have a real issue with it, let me know now. Let's get the argument out when mm-hmm. I can, be the kind of go-between. But otherwise, if it's not listed here, just dump it all, unless mm-hmm. you're feeling really. And she went through, this is what Dad and I want done. This is what. And one of my favorite parts was she didn't say, what do you guys want to do for, mm-hmm. with our body. Like, what do you want? Because I don't know. I don't want to think about that. You tell us what you want, and then we're going to do that. And I totally believe you that that will help you heal. But my parents are in phenomenal health. It was just, they're so proactive. She has this piece of paper. All three of us have it. There will be no fighting. I think her biggest fear is that their death would cause fraction in the family.
And it does.
That's a reality. And so I think what you're saying is, listen, it's hard. It's a hard conversation. Have it now when everybody's in a good place and you can be the intermediary between the kids if that's necessary. But stuff shouldn't have a hold on people. It does. So at this point, figure out who's getting your piano, figure out who's getting, you know, and then nobody has to think about it or do anything. And they can just really go through the grieving process without all the extra stuff.
On this podcast, we talk a lot about the mother self, but also the other self. And so we would love to hear a couple of ways that you tend to nurture Jenny as the other self.
Wow. I forgot that I'm supposed to nurture myself.
That's what everyone says.
No, really? Okay.
We're all, yeah.
That's a topic for another day. How do I nurture myself? Well, photography. I mean, that's a great outlet for me.
Yeah.
I'm able to be creative in a very different way than I'm able to be on a day-to-day basis. I love to travel, and I love to read. Read is a great escape, trying on different personalities on for size for a couple hours. I'm finally at the age now where I don't need to be on top of my kids 24/7. I can now sit down on a couch and read a few chapters and be relatively assured they'll be alive when I'm finished. Right. But those are probably the main things.
Yeah. Awesome.
I love it. We like to end our conversations with one of our favorite segments that we call the Obsess Sesh.
The Obsess Sesh! It's
my
favorite.
It's my favorite. So give us three things you are currently obsessing over.
I am obsessing over the TV series and book series Outlander.
Oh, I have friends.
Yeah. Yeah, that takes up a good portion of my time. I basically ignored my kids for about 3 solid months while I read eight books that are each about 800 or 900 pages long.
Yeah, so funny.
It's addictive, and it's a great, great TV show on Stars. So that's one thing. I would say the second thing, salt and vinegar chips. That is my guilty pleasure, and I get my chips shipped from Pennsylvania because they are Hers, H-E-R-R-S, Hers salt and vinegar chips from Pennsylvania, and I have found no others around here that even come close. So okay. I ship those.
Special order.
Yeah. So that is number two. And number three, I would have to say Chuck's. I'm getting back into Chuck Taylor's.
Yes.
So it's something, you know, I wore them as a kid, and my oldest has, you know, gotten into them, and it's something we both kind of share this, you know, very materialistic passion for. You know, shame on me. Here I am talking about getting rid of things, and I'm talking about,
unless,
you know,
they're Chuck Taylors.
Or six pairs of Chuck Taylors, but I do wear them. I do wear them a lot.
And they're pretty well made.
They are well made.
Okay.
They are well made.
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Those are my things.
I love
right
it.
Now.
I love it.
Good.
Well, Jenny, thank you so much for being a guest on the Mama Bear Dares. We think that not only does the book offer a lot to us, but like your interpretation of the book will be so good for our listeners. So thank you for being a guest.
All right, Mama Bears, it is time for the dare. Today, we dare you to think about your own relationship to things that occupy your space. Do you feel overwhelmed by clutter? Maybe now is the time to dig in and Cone Marie your closet. Do you feel that you sometimes value things over people? It might be time to look your loved ones in the eyes and be reminded of their worth. Do you find yourself surrounded by just the right amount of clutter, or look up from your lunch at your kitchen table to see beautiful things that make your heart happy? Congratulate yourself. Wherever you may fall on the magic of tidying up spectrum, we dare you to simply realize that there is one. We dare you to fully realize that you are more than your collection of things, and that everything has a proper place in your home and your life.
Mama Bears, seek the beautiful things in life, whatever that beauty looks like to you, and make a place for it in your home and in your heart.
That's right. This is not an easy process, Mama Bears, but we want to know how you're doing. Is this something that resonates with you? Something that you hear and you say, oh, there is room for improvement in my life? Or do you feel like you already have a grasp on this issue? Let us know. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Leave a message on our email, mamabeardares@gmail.com. Just enter into the conversation. We would love to hear from you. And also, rate and review us on iTunes. We have a link on our Facebook page to the iTunes directly where you can review us. That just helps us reach more Mama Bears. And it also just makes Leslie and me so happy. So
we do so appreciate that.
We sure do. So thank you so much to Jenny for the awesome conversation. And Mama Bears, we will see you back here on Wednesday to kind of further the conversation about what clothing does in our lives and what it did specifically for Leslie for a year.
Mm-hmm. I can't wait to talk about it and see you back here on Wednesday, Mama Bears.
Have a great week.
Have a great week.